Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Fracking is getting more attention than ever in California, the country's fourth largest oil-producing state, and there's a lot happening. First off, here's how fracking works. Hundreds of thousands to millions of gallons of water are mixed with toxic chemicals and injected down wells at very high pressure, fracturing the underground rock formation to force oil and gas to the surface. With the help of then-Vice President Dick Cheney, the former head of Halliburton, President George W. Bush's energy legislation, the 2005 Energy Policy Act, included a provision that prohibits the EPA from regulating fracking under the Safe Drinking Water Act. So that means that regulations are left to the states. But many states, including California, in many states, there are no regulations. That could change. At least 10 bills have been introduced in the state legislature. Three would impose moratoriums to halt fracking until regulations can be put in effect. On April 9th, a bill requiring oil companies to disclose the source and amounts of water cleared the California Assembly's Natural Resources Committee on a 6-3 party line vote. But the big question is, why isn't the state regulating fracking? Who is making these decisions? And if we're concerned about this, who should we contact? Today we are joined by Jason Marshall. He's Chief Deputy Director of California's Department of Conservation. Jason spent 11 years as DOC's Legislative Director, heading up the Office of Governmental and Environmental Relations, and he joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show. And we are joined by Cassie Siegel, Senior Counsel and Climate Law Institute Director with the Center for Biological Diversity. Cassie coordinates the center's work on fracking in California. She says fracking is the number one environmental issue in California, and she joins us from beautiful Joshua Tree in Southern California. Hi, Cassie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's great to have you. And we did invite Western State Petroleum Association to join us. They represent oil and gas companies. They declined our invitation. We also invited Occidental Oil and Gas. They haven't returned our calls. Veneco suggested calling the California Independent Petroleum Association, and they told us that our request came in too late. So unfortunately, we will not be joined by anyone in this industry, but we did try. So first off, Cassie, let's start off with you. UC Berkeley just came out with a new report called Regulation of Hydraulic Fracturing in California, a Wastewater and Water Quality Perspective. And they say that the general practice of fracking in the state is not new. It's been employed for many decades. But what is new are projections of dramatically increased activity in the state driven by advanced technologies and a demand for oil. So where is fracking currently happening in the state?
Fracking is happening in at least 9 counties. It's already quite widespread in California, and I think it's important to make the distinction between hydraulic fracturing, which is just the physical breaking up of the rock, which has gone on for decades, and modern fracking. The latest fracking methods, which have enabled the oil and gas booms that we've seen around the country in places like Pennsylvania, North Dakota, that's been enabled by new fracking methods, including the use of these new chemical concoctions called slick water. The companies use hundreds of toxic and carcinogenic chemicals in this mixture. Things like horizontal drilling, where you can have well bores go for several miles horizontally underground. There's new risks with these new methods, and they're less than a decade old anywhere in the country and have probably been used in California only much more recently than that. So it's important distinction between old fracking and new.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because we often in the media will say hydraulic fracturing or fracking, and hardly anyone makes this distinction.
Exactly. And it's the newest methods that have allowed the oil companies to go out there and get oil and gas out of these shale formations where they couldn't previously economically recover these unconventional extreme fossil fuels.
And so many of us have seen documentaries like Gasland. There's a lot of really great documentaries out there. We did a show recently about how fracking is affecting our food supply. And so how often is this modern fracking, what you're calling it, which includes these chemicals, how often is that happening in California?
Well, unfortunately, we don't know, because state regulators don't currently even track or monitor where fracking is going on in California, so we don't have full information. Californians can't find out where, when, or how companies are fracking in California or what chemicals they're using. The information we have is just from voluntary partial disclosure by oil companies. So we know, for example, in some wells they've used very dangerous chemicals like trimethylbenzene and other things. But a lot of times we don't have full disclosure, so we don't know the full extent.
And that is Cassie Siegel, Senior Counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. And Jason, you are Chief Deputy Director of California's Department of Conservation. And first off, can you tell us what the department actually does and what role does your department play when it comes to fracking?
Well, fracking is a, as you've indicated, and as Cassie indicated, fracking is a production stimulation activity that is used to extract oil from the ground. In California, we're principally talking about oil production, whereas back east, most of the production that people are talking about with regard to fracking is for natural gas from what are referred to as tight shales or unconventional formations. An unconventional formation is one that just doesn't have a sealing cap rock to keep the hydrocarbon in place, and so it stays in place because, well, the rock just simply isn't porous enough to allow the gas to flow. In California, we don't have a lot of those types of formations. The Monterey Shale may end up being one that is like that, though not necessarily in all areas. But to get back to the department's role, the department is the regulator of the oil and gas industry relative to the construction of their wells and the monitoring and the maintenance of their facilities. So when you drill a well in California, you have to abide by the construction standards that have been laid down, and they're some of the strongest in the nation. Other states require similar type construction standards, but only for the wells that, through which fracking is going to occur, hydraulic fracturing is going to occur. In California, those are standards that apply to all wells. And what that really means, what are these construction standards? What that really means is that when you drill a well and you pass from the surface through various layers of geology, some of those layers bear water in them before you get to hydrocarbons. As you pass through those layers, those construction standards require that you place cement between that metal casing through which the oil is going to flow back up, or gas is going to flow back up, that you place cement outside the casing to help seal it to the rock. There are a host of other provisions, but the key one here is providing that what we call zonal isolation, which is to say you don't let the water from one layer get into the water or the hydrocarbon from another layer by putting that cement outside the casing and sealing it to the rock. Similarly, you don't allow the hydrocarbons to come back up. The operators don't allow the hydrocarbons to come back up into a water zone because you, again, have that cement seal. Once that well is constructed and you've got those cement seals up and down across those zones of water and hydrocarbon, then they go about the practice of perforating those seals in the actual zone that they intend to produce from. In the case of hydraulic fracturing, it's a production stimulation activity that's been going on, as Cassie indicated, for many years in California, though perhaps not with the same volume of water. When we talk about hydraulic fracturing in California, if you look at the average number of gallons of water that's used, it's somewhere in the 100,000 gallons of water. I think the highest number that's been recorded on FracFocus, as was indicated earlier, a voluntary reporting site, the highest volume that was used is 1.5 million gallons. But
let me just ask you, Jason.
I'll just wrap up real quick. The regulation of that activity is really that is on the books right now, and we'll get into what we're doing, I suspect, later in the conversation.
Yeah, and
the regulation on the books is to make sure that
I want to make sure that people are following us, because I think you're throwing out some words there, and people are saying, "Wait, I don't understand this." A lot of people can't even really explain how fracking works. So I just want to make sure that we've got everybody on board here, because this is really important information. So just to be clear, when we're talking about fracking in California, and we're talking about the modern fracking that Cassie explained earlier, when you're talking about these new fracking methods involving these toxic chemicals, so the companies that are engaging in this in California are not looking for natural gas, it's all for oil?
primary production in California is for oil. The natural gas that exists in California is mostly on the northern part of the state. There's associated gas, that is to say, gas that is found with the oil and the water in the reservoirs, oil reservoirs down south. But most of the gas in California is up here in the north. There is some fracking that occurs, but it's relatively limited because, for the most part, the natural gas deposits in northern California are porous enough that they allow the natural gas to flow without need for that kind of a production stimulation activity.
And so why don't we know more about this? Why is it so hard to get information about where fracking is actually happening in California?
Well, unfortunately, the regulations in the past did not require reporting to us of the specific practice of hydraulic fracturing. It also didn't require the reporting to us of the specific practice of descaling a well, for instance. But as we've discovered, and as we're looking at an evolution in the practice of hydraulic fracturing, we realize that our regulations need to really take a step forward. And so that's why we've got a new regulatory process that we're going through right now.
And what is that exactly?
Well, we've released what we refer to as some discussion draft regulations. I don't want to get too geeky about the government processes, but there's a rulemaking process that you have to go through to adopt a regulation. It can take up to a year, and because you're limited to a year, and because we know there's a great deal of interest in this, what we've done is before we even start that process, we've released what we've referred to as a discussion draft of regulations. That gives us some time, and we've been engaging in some workshops. As a matter of fact, tomorrow we're having one in Santa Barbara. We're engaging in some workshops across the state to get public input on that discussion draft. The rough outlines of the regulations that we're proposing include some public notice. They include advance notice, obviously, to the department. They include pre-testing of wells to make sure that they've got the strength to withstand the pressures that are applied when you do, and the operators do, hydraulic fracturing. They require monitoring during the hydraulic fracturing job and monitoring after the fact, as well as reporting after the fact, not only of what volume of fluids are used, but also of the chemicals.
And there's also going to be a workshop in Monterey on Tuesday, April 30th at the Hilton Garden Inn.
Again, that is correct.
Tuesday, April 30th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Monterey. And this begins it's an all-day workshop, actually, from noon to 8 with a dinner break.
Yeah, we are, each of these workshops we're going through, we're spending about 45 minutes per what we refer to as per section, general area of interest in the regulation. Again, about public notice or advance notice, about the pre-testing, where we're just really digging in and taking comments from people. You know, what are we missing? You know, what's right about this? What's wrong about this? And what other things should we look at? And we've gotten some very good comments, which will go into revisions before we enter the official Administrative Procedures Act rulemaking process.
And Cassie, since we're talking about Monterey, we had an important decision come down recently. The Monterey Shale Formation is estimated to hold more than 15 billion barrels of oil. A decision of a federal court made public on Monday found that the federal government violated U.S. environmental law when it leased out 2,500 acres of oil acres for oil and gas development in 2011 without conducting a thorough review of environmental impacts. Can you talk about the significance of that ruling and what does it mean exactly?
Absolutely. And in California, both state regulators and federal regulators have responsibility for protecting the public from fracking. And unfortunately, what we've had is fracking going on in the state without either state or federal regulators really carrying out those responsibilities. The federal agency is the Bureau of Land Management, and it leases out mineral rights that are owned by the federal government. That can be under public land, so under recreational areas. It can also be mineral rights under people's private lands where they have their houses and other things. And the Bureau of Land Management leased out about 2,500 acres actually in 2011 without conducting an environmental review of fracking before they sold off these mineral rights to the oil companies. We challenged that in court, and last week the federal judge ruled that in fact it was illegal for BLM to sell off those mineral rights for fracking without doing the environmental review. That's very good. It's precedent-setting. It's, we believe, the first decision on this issue. And, in fact, we have just this morning filed a new case against the same agency for leasing about 18,000 acres in Monterey and other counties for fracking. The law that's at issue there, the National Environmental Policy Act, is the national version of a law we have here in California called the California Environmental Quality Act, which requires state regulators to look at the environmental impacts of all of the approvals they issue and the decisions they make. State regulators have been approving thousands of wells in the state that are then fracked without any environmental review of the impact of fracking. And we are in court right now against Jason's agency trying to get them to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act. So this decision under federal law is important and hopefully quite precedent-setting on this issue.
Can you tell us more about that lawsuit against the CDC?
Right. So the lawsuit against state regulators, it's the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources. We filed late last year, and it seeks compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act. So before the state regulators would give approval for an oil and gas well that's going to be fracked, they would have to do an environmental analysis of what the impacts of that might be. Things like, where is the water going to come from? What chemicals are going to be used? What's the risk of earthquakes? What will happen to the wastewater once it comes back up? Hundreds of dangerous chemicals are used or put underground, and then some of that water comes back up. When it comes back up, it has all the chemicals that went down, plus other things like arsenic, lead, even radioactivity that are underground. The disposal of the wastewater from fracking is one of the most serious problems we face. The air pollution from the fracking, all of the traditional air pollutants that cause ozone, asthma, things like that, are exacerbated by this activity. There's also new air pollution. We have study and review so far of none of these impacts in the state, and so that's what this case seeks to fix.
What's the status of it?
Well, it's still in the relatively early stages, so we'll be moving it as fast as we can, but they do take a little while to move through the court system.
So what about those questions, Jason? How will those questions be dealt with?
Well, I'm happy to talk about any of those items in, whether you want to talk about seismicity, whether you want to talk about water usage or relative amounts of water that we're talking about. But given that we are under litigation, I'm quite limited from being able to discuss specifics about that case. So if you'd like to talk, if you'd like to discuss general issues like, for instance, the question of seismicity, it's been noted or it's been alleged that, quote, fracking causes earthquakes. The reality is quite a bit different. It's been noted back east that there have been earthquakes, but they've been traced to the disposal of water. Now, when you talk about disposal of water underground, you talk about placing it into a formation. The places where earthquakes have occurred are places where you're placing water into a formation that that doesn't really have the capacity to hold that water. So you're talking about putting water underground and then increasing the pressure underground above what the native pore pressure would have been, the initial pore pressure that was present. You talk about that, and you start talking about exceeding the capacity of the ground to withstand injection. In California, we produce roughly 3 billion barrels, 3 billion, excuse me, that number may be, I think it's 3 billion barrels of water every day with the, excuse me, every year with the oil that's produced in the state. And it, about 75% of it goes back into the ground. Compare that to the roughly 100,000 gallons. A barrel is 44 gallons. The roughly 100,000 gallons on average used in a hydraulic fracturing job in California. And the scope of or magnitude of what we're talking about reinjecting into the ground and the addition by hydraulic fracturing is negligible. About 75% of that water that comes up from what we refer to as produced water it's referred to that because it comes up with the oil. I'm sorry, I should have led with this. What most listeners probably don't know is that when you produce oil in California, when the operators produce oil in California, about 95% of it is water. So for every 100 gallons of fluid that comes up out of the ground, about 95 gallons of that is water. And the operators then need to do something with it. And that's without hydraulic fracturing. What do they do with that water? Well, for the most part, they reinject it back into the formations from which it came. In about 25% of the cases, it goes to what we refer to as a disposal well. And that's that becomes more of a one-way trip as opposed to reinjection back into the formation from which it came, where you're just cycling the water in and out of the ground and bringing more oil up.
We actually had
talking about if I can finish.
Yeah, we just had a caller had a question about the enormous amounts of water used, and according to a piece in the San Jose Merc, and they got this number from the Western States Petroleum Association, the organization that we invited onto the show today, but they declined our request. They said that last year California oil drillers extracted and reinjected more than 120 billion gallons of water.
That's about right. 44 times 3 is about 120. 3 billion barrels times 42, excuse me, 42. 3 billion times 42 would get you to about 120 billion gallons. It's a conversion issue here. So the caller is correct. But anyway, the disposal of water into underground formations in California, for the most part, goes back into depleted oil fields. So the native pore pressure has been decreased by the extraction of the oil, and then you start putting water back in there, and you're not going back to exceeding that native pore pressure. And the volume of water that we're talking about having reinjected into in California annually, 120 billion gallons or 3 billion barrels, whatever factor you want to use, whatever measure you want to use, without triggering earthquakes, is something of a testament to how this practice has been going in California.
And Cassie, before we go to break, what would you add about that? Because we are getting a few emails about water and potential earthquakes.
Well, fracking itself, breaking up the rock, has been associated with small earthquakes in both British Columbia and the UK. I think probably the larger seismic risk is from the injection of the wastewater. We've seen earthquakes in Texas that did hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage to people's houses, most likely caused by the injection of fracking wastewater. In other places as well, it's a very big problem, and you know, we may already have some wastewater injection going on in California, sure, but the thing about fracking is that it enables a boom, it brings new risk, and it brings this boom which exacerbates all of the problems, and right now that's going on right now in our state without any protection for Californians. And so what we need to do is have the state regulators, have Jason's agency, not allow fracking to continue while they continue to study the problem and look at what regulations might be put into effect to protect Californians. We shouldn't have the activity going on. If the state regulators aren't willing to do that, then we need the legislature to step in. But the problem right now is that we have the activity going on without protections.
And so you're calling for a moratorium. We'll talk about that after a break. The New York Assembly actually voted to extend their fracking moratorium until the year 2015. This vote just came down last month. Today we're talking about fracking in California. It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
We invite you to join us on Your Call. Take part in today's conversation. The number to call is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. If you'd prefer to write rather than call, the email inbox address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also simply post a message at yourcallradio.org. Programming on KALW is supported in part by An Evening with David Sedaris. Sedaris will visit San Francisco's War Memorial Opera House Sunday, May the 5th, for an evening of all new readings and recollections from his newest title, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. Tickets and information about David Sedaris, Sunday, May 5th, at the War Memorial Opera House at davidsedarisontour.com.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll discuss media coverage of the presidential elections and violent protests in Venezuela. We'll also talk about coverage of the Senate's rejection of the background check bill. There's a lot of media coverage on these gun bills, so if anything stands out for you, be sure to send it to us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And this weekend is Earth Day, and we just wanted to let you know what's going on in Northern California. There's a cleanup day at Stinson Beach, Saturday, April 20th at 11 a.m. In Santa Cruz, there's a celebration at the San Lorenzo Park on Saturday from 11 to 4. There's a cleanup day at McKinley Monument, 8:30 in the morning. In Oakland, there's a volunteer day all over Oakland. We'll put links on our website all day. And then also on Monday for Earth Day, there's going to be a big Keystone protest in front of the San Francisco EPA office, 75 Hawthorne Street, and that starts at noon. You can find more information about Earth Day events on our website, yourcallradio.org. And on Monday, we'll be speaking with a number of activists to find out what compelled them to get involved. That's on Monday. And today we are talking about, well, a related issue, really, is we're talking about fracking in California. There's so much going on this issue. There are at least 10 bills that have been introduced in the state legislature. 2 years ago, there were none. Now, three of these bills would impose complete moratoriums to halt fracking until regulations can be put in effect. We're talking about this with Cassie Siegel, Senior Counsel and Climate Law Institute Director with the Center for Biological Diversity. She says fracking is the number one issue in the state. Jason Marshall is Chief Deputy Director of California's Department of Conservation. They regulate the oil and gas industry in California. And we also want to mention that we invited the Western State Petroleum Association. They declined our invitation. Occidental Oil and Gas has not returned our calls. Veneco suggested calling the California Independent Petroleum Association, but they told us that our request came in too late. And we'd love to hear from you. If you've got questions on fracking, if you're concerned about this, what questions do you have? And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. And if you work in this industry, because we weren't able to get anyone on, we'd love to hear from you. You can be anonymous if you'd like. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So just quickly, before we go to break, Cassie, your group and so many others are calling for a moratorium. What would it take? It would take a piece of legislation?
Well, we're calling for a ban on fracking. You know, the one issue we haven't talked about yet is the climate crisis. And fracking the 15 billion barrels of shale oil in the Monterey Shale would undercut our state's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We need policies that decrease the demand for oil to get us off of fossil fuels. We don't need a huge societal investment in new infrastructure for using this inherently dangerous and damaging new technology to go get this new unconventional oil in California. So, you know, we've been talking about the current situation in California, which is uncontrolled fracking, and a lot of the problems with that, some of the proposed solutions for individual pieces of it. But ultimately, the best solution for California is to ban fracking. Other states like New York, which has a moratorium, have bans or moratoriums, and Californians are certainly entitled to just as much protection from fracking as people have in New York. So that's what we are working for, and we do have three bills introduced in the legislature right now, which would put some form of a prohibition or moratorium on fracking. And so we are working to support those bills, and it's great that we have so much interest in the legislature this session.
And Jason, where does the Department of Conservation stand on moratoriums?
We haven't taken a position on any of those bills as yet.
Will you, or what will make the department take a stand?
We haven't taken a position on them yet. We're in the process of evaluating all of the bills. I believe there's about 13 of them in the legislature right now. As we move through the legislative session, I'm certain that the administration will be coming up with a position on those. But the department alone does not take positions. It's something that the the administration would be looking at and communicating.
I was surprised to learn that Texas became the first state in the country to force oil companies to disclose the chemicals they're using when they frack. They passed this bill. Rick Perry, governor there, signed it in 2011. What about that? Where does the department stand on requiring oil companies to at least let us know what chemicals they're pumping into
our,
the ground?
Our regulations would call for them to notice us, notice the public, actually, very specifically, requiring them to report out to the public via the Internet the chemicals that are used in hydraulic fracturing.
And so they're not doing that now?
No, they're not. They voluntarily reported about 700 hydraulic fracturing jobs last year. But as Cassie noted, it is voluntary reporting. Our regulations would make it mandatory.
Do you have the right to contact them to say, what are you pumping into the ground?
Pardon me?
Can you contact them to ask them what they're pumping into the ground?
We can ask them, and as I said, we have. Last year, right around this time, we did ask them to voluntarily report not only to us but to the public on what is referred to as Frac Focus. It's a website managed by the Groundwater Protection Council, an organization of state regulators.
But they don't have to give you the information at this point?
Not presently, but our regulations would make it mandatory.
All right. Well, we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's go to John in Oakland. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. I have two related comments. First, Jason mentioned the sealing of the wells by cement. But as somebody who's worked in construction, I know that it's impossible to really guarantee that seals like that, that the cement actually does seal the well. And that's not just at the time that the cement is pumped in there. There's also the question that seal or supposed seal is there for all time in the future, and cement does deteriorate. The other related point I wanted to make is that he puts forward these ideas as if he were the spokesman for the industry itself. And all of this stuff is just purely in theory, and the practice proves to be very different, and that's why I support banning of all fracking, because even if it could be regulated, it's clear that the regulators are controlled by the industry rather than the other way around.
All right, we'll stay on the line and we'll get a comment from Jason.
Rose, I really would like to take issue with the last caller's statement. We're regulators. We're not the oil and gas industry. And I would note that he makes a very good point about cement, and that is why our regulations would require the testing of the cement before. Cement may have been placed to cross one of these zones 5, 10, 15 years ago. And he's right that conditions may change. That's why we require that they conduct some form of testing. I could go into the details about what kind of testing, but basically it's a well log that identifies whether or not the cement is still maintaining a competent seal between the well casing and the surrounding rock.
Are you still with us, John?
But the point is that well is there for the indefinite future. And if that seal has deteriorated, then there's nothing that can be done about it because it's so deep down into the ground.
That's actually practically incorrect, sir.
No, that's not incorrect. If you don't like my view on what you represent, but I've just listened to you throughout the show, and you've done nothing but parrot the industry position.
Rosa, talked about cement, and if I could just make one more point about that. We know that wells fail over time. With some data we have from Pennsylvania, we know about 6 to 7% of wells, even if they're properly cemented. And a lot of the times when you have a problem with the well, like the BP blowout disaster in the Gulf of Mexico a couple of years ago, it's because the well was improperly cemented. But even if it's properly cemented, cement degrades over time, and then you have problems. Right now, in California, the state regulators aren't even keeping track of well failure rates. So when we've tried to get that information for California, we don't have it. So a lot of the times, we have industry saying, this practice is safe, but we don't have any system in place to find problems when they arise, and that's a huge problem in this area. And could I also make one more point about the chemicals used? And I, you know, I appreciate Jason's effort so much, and you know, all of the efforts of the people in our regulatory agencies. But I have to disagree with something that he said about the fracking chemicals. Disclosure is a huge problem. You know, I mean, we need to know. Nobody wants poison in their air and water. And when companies are using poisons that can get into our air and water and environment, that can't be a secret. You know, that has to be disclosed. If it's not disclosed, we can't prevent the harm from happening in the first place. It's a huge problem with fracking. As you mentioned, Texas passed a so-called disclosure law, but fracking chemicals were withheld from public disclosure 19,000 times in the first year after that law was passed under a claim of trade secret. There is a huge loophole in disclosure laws around the country for trade secrets, and what our state regulators have proposed in these discussion to draft regulations on trade secrets is even weaker than what's been problematic in other states like Texas. The proposal is that companies would only have to disclose to the public after fracking has occurred. And even then, if they make a claim of a trade secret, the chemicals wouldn't even have to be given to the state regulators under routine circumstances. So this is just an enormous problem, and in many ways the discussion draft regulations that California has proposed would be the weakest in the nation, and we're already seeing so many problems around the country.
Jason, what about that? I think that's why people like John are so frustrated, because they're feeling like they cannot get this kind of information, and they don't know why this kind of information is not available to the public.
We completely understand the frustration over the issue of trade secrets, and our regulations attempt to get at that by saying that the information needs to be provided to us when there's a spill, when there's an investigation going on about possible contamination, or when you've got a case of an individual who may be having a health problem as a result of exposure to hydraulic fracturing fluids. But what our regulations can't really make go away is something that's in California state law, which is the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, and that's our regulations are attempting to balance between the issue of that Uniform Trade Secrets Act and the Public Records Act requirements. And there is a different model, we have said this publicly, a different model that could be applied to this department that exists for the Department of Toxic Substance Control for disclosure of trade secrets, and we welcome legislative action on that. We've publicly said that we would like to see the provisions that that apply to the Department of Toxic Substance Control be applied to the Department of Conservation as well.
Cassie, what about those trade secrets?
Trade secrets, trade secret provisions in state law, it has been a huge problem around the country. And, you know, it's something that legal scholars have pointed out for years, that oil and gas companies, chemical companies are winning right now. When you have these laws that say trade secrets can be protected to protect the profits of these companies, come into conflict with environmental and health and safety laws that say we need disclosure. Without disclosure, you can't detect problems. You can't prevent problems from happening in the first place. A lot of times, the oil companies and the chemical companies are winning. So absolutely, you know, this is not a problem that is confined to fracking, though it has certainly been brought to the fore but by the fracking booms. The California legislature can and should act to just fix the problem by saying that chemicals used in fracking could never qualify as a trade secret. Absolutely. However, what state regulators have proposed, the way trade secrets would be handled, is a lot less protective than what they could absolutely do under existing law. And you know, there's two questions here. Do the regulators get the information from the oil companies on all of the chemicals used? And once the regulators have the information, can the public get it? And most of the battles around the country have been, can the public get it from the regulators? What California has just proposed is that unless there's already been a spiller or an accident, the regulatory agency wouldn't even receive the information from the oil companies. And that's just completely unworkable on many levels.
That is Cassie Siegel, Senior Counsel and Climate Law Institute Director with the Center for Biological Diversity. She coordinates the center's work on fracking in California and says it's the number one environmental issue in the state. Jason Marshall is the Chief Deputy Director of California's Department of Conservation, and they regulate the oil and gas industry. We've got just about 10 minutes left. We have full lines. We'll have one open in a few minutes, 866-798-8255, or you can email feedback@yourcallradio.com. Or better yet, leave a comment on our website so others can see it at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear next from Rita in Oakland. Hi, Rita. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I have in front of me a transcript that was done by Living on Earth, and it's called Mixing Oil and Water. This was on February 11th, 2011. And this is about the use of our clean drinking water that goes through the Kern County Water Agency. And down to the south, Bruce Gellerman interviewed the head of some of these water agencies, and he was told that they get most of their water for the fracking for, this is by the oil companies, taking water from the State Water Project. And he said, asked him, well, how much is most? Now, this was from the head of the Kern County Water Agency and the West Kern Water District. He said about 83% of West Kern Water District's water comes out of the California aqueduct that goes by. And so he asked him, so you're using clean drinking water to extract oil from tar sands? Oh, yeah. They can't use dirty water. They have to use clean drinking water, and he equated it like using dirty water in your coffee maker. So he said, well, from reading your article, this area where the aqueduct carrying clean drinking water goes right past towns that don't have clean drinking water. And he said exactly, you know, so the water flows right past the oil to the oil fields, and these towns are forced to deal with the water well that they have, and in most cases is contaminated. Now, to me, that is appalling. To see that this water has been diverted for a number of years, and it's a very accurate, I mean, he was speaking to the actual people that are doing this, and I don't know how many people know what's going on with our water. And not only are we contaminating the water, you know, our water sources, the aqueducts underneath, I mean, aquifers underneath, but if they're using clean drinking water to get oil out, a source that is eventually going to be, you know, it's not renewable.
Right. Well, Rita, thank you so much for calling in. Jason, are you aware of that in Kern County, and how common is this up and down the state?
It's what we understand from operators, oil and gas operators, is that is roughly what the caller just noted, that they prefer to use clean water for their hydraulic fracturing operations. They have told us that they are looking at recycled water, but for the most part, it's our understanding that that the source of the water that they're using is it's clean water. It's not recycled. It's not what we, again, from earlier in the conversation, it's not produced water. And they tell us that that has to do with basically getting the right chemical concentrations for the activities that they're doing with the hydraulic fracturing, the propagation of the fractures, the carrying of the sands or the ceramics that are going to prop open the formations once they fracture the rock. But, you know, our regulations don't really get at the question of where do they get the water. We would certainly encourage them to use recycled water, but it's beyond the scope of our authority to require a given source of water. We're looking at the question, though, of in the reporting of sourcing, identifying source.
What about limits?
Pardon me?
What about limits? Are there any rules as to how much water they can use?
I don't believe there are any other than what they can economically procure.
Wow.
The volume of water that they're using, it's important to note. I think the Resources Agency observed something on the order of 200 acre-feet of water was used in all of 2012, according to the reported information on Frac Focus, and that's roughly equivalent to something on the order of, I think it's like six, I'm sorry, I'm going to get the number wrong, but it's under 40 families' consumption of water annually.
And so, Cassie, just quickly, we've got a number of really important calls I want to be able to get to in 5 minutes, but what about this issue of clean water?
The water use is a huge issue for our water-starved state. And, you know, the amount of fracking that's already going on is already unacceptable. What people are being exposed to in places like Culver City, in Shafter, it's already unacceptably dangerous. But remember, this is nothing compared to what we're going to experience if we have the fracking boom like we've seen in places like Pennsylvania and North Dakota. Large parts of our state could be transformed overnight with almost unimaginably large consequences to our water supply, air, climate, and communities. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Rita. Let's go next to Emily in San Francisco. Hi, Emily.
Hi. Good morning. I recently heard about a study, I think it was out of the University of Colorado, that found that fracking contributes to pretty serious health problems in people living near fracked wells. And I was wondering if your guests could comment on what those health problems are and what California is doing to mitigate them.
All right. Thank you. Do you want to address that first, Cassie? This is a big question, but very important.
Absolutely. There's one study out of the Colorado School of Public Health that Emily referred to, found that fracking, the air pollution from fracking is contributing to serious health problems in people living near fracked wells, both cancer and non-cancer health risk. Those are both, there's both familiar problems. So fracking contributes to ozone, which causes lots of health problems like asthma that keeps kids home from school, adults home from work. In California, we already have some of the worst air quality in the nation. We simply can't afford to add this on top of that. There are also new health risks that come from fracking, though. Some of those aren't even yet fully understood. The South Coast Air Board has just put in place a rule to study some of the new air pollution that comes from these fracking chemicals. And, you know, when the water comes back to the surface, a lot of these chemicals can go into the air from those pits or ponds where it's stored. We don't even know what chemicals are in there right now. That's why in California, the Air Board is studying those. People are getting sick around the country that live near these fields. They're getting dizzy. They're getting nauseous. There's one terrible story from Colorado where a woman named Laura Amos, who experienced one of the earliest fracking booms, there was an accident there. Her well water was contaminated with a chemical called 2-butoxyethanol, and that causes a rare condition called an adrenal tumor. She drank that water for 3 years after the accident because state regulators didn't test for that chemical. The companies denied using it at first, but eventually it came to light that it had been used and in her water. And many of these problems take years to detect. Some of these chemicals impact our reproductive system, for example.
Yeah, and we've heard stories about this across the country. There's a really good documentary that focuses on the woman that you just mentioned called Split Estate, and it's about the health issues that people in Colorado are currently facing. It's really actually devastating to see what happened to that woman. Thank you for calling. We've got a time for one more call, so let's hear from Cheryl and Hayward. Hi, Cheryl.
Thank you very much. Hi. I agree with the caller earlier from Oakland who said that the representative from the state, Jason, is a mouthpiece for the industry. And I don't believe this is not an accident. I just posted an article on the website, Your Call Radio website, that you know, tells the story of this as a reporter for the Sacramento Bee named David Siders, who reported on the termination in 2011. Governor Brown fired the previous director of the Department of Conservation, as Derek Chernow, and a woman named Elena Miller, who was California's then gas and oil supervisor, and they were resisting the attempts by the oil industry to just have a completely free hand. After the death of a worker in Bakersfield, they protested much more strongly. They wanted a moratorium. Brown fired them and replaced them with Mark Nicodem. I don't know who replaced Daley Miller, but Jason's supervisor is a man named Mark Nicodem, who, if you look at his website on the state of California, you'll see that his history is one of, oh, I'm trying to find the balance between industry and in the environment. Well, there is no balance in the case of fracking, and I have no confidence that the state agency, Department of Conservation, in spite of all of his talk, has any commitment to regulating or controlling this industry. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Cheryl. Earth Justice has been writing about that. I'll get a comment from Jason in a minute, but Cassie, we don't have much time to go into this case. Did Cheryl lay this out there correctly, what happened behind the scenes?
Yes, and the firing of Derek Chernow and Elena Miller is a very sad chapter in our state, and folks can get more information on that online. It's just really essential that folks that are concerned about this get involved. We are asking state regulators to prohibit fracking, to stop fracking from going on in our state. We are asking the legislature to do the same. People can get involved. We do not have to...
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I have to give final thoughts to Jason before we end here.
I appreciate that there's a lot of mystique or mystery around prior personnel actions. I simply would note this for you and your listeners. Prior to Mr. Nicodem and my arrival at the Department of Conservation, the Department of Conservation's own website said that fracking didn't occur in California. The fact that under Mark Nicodem and I, the department is actually engaged in a process of proposing regulations for the practice of hydraulic fracturing, rather than leaving the regulation silent and relying, as we have for years, on simply good well construction standards, I would hope would be enough for reasoned listeners to realize that, no, we're not anything other than committed public servants, regulators of the oil and gas industry. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, Jason, thank you for joining us, and we hope you come back because we think it's really valuable to have this conversation, and we hope to have many more in the months to come. Jason Marshall is Chief Deputy Director of California's Department of Conservation. Cassie Siegel is Senior Counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Thank you. Thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening. On the next Jour Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation about media coverage of the Senate's rejection of the background check bill. Who is investigating the power of the gun lobby in Washington? We'll also discuss coverage of the presidential elections and violent protests in Venezuela. We'll be joined by investigative journalist Peter Stone, the Center for Public Integrity's Dave Leventhal, and The Guardian's Virginia Lopez. Where did you see the best report this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.